The Sangha today is 26th of November, the year 2009. We are in New Hamlet at Oplam Village for the winter retreat. It's the first talk of the winter retreat. That is the fourth day of the winter retreat. And the power of the practice is very strong. I wish that the Sangha can keep that powerful energy throughout the 90 day of winter retreat. The subject of today is to recognize our happiness. The art of happiness. The art of happiness is the art to create happiness, to maintain happiness, preserve happiness. We have a number of feelings. Throughout the day, we have many kind of feelings. The pleasant feelings, the unpleasant feeling, and neutral feeling. And so, the happiness, the art of happiness is linked with our practice to be in touch with our feeling. We can visualize that happiness is like many flowers in our garden, that we can recognize. The gardener can create many flowers of happiness. It means try to plant a number of good flowers of happiness. You practitioner, you also can plant a number of flowers of happiness in you. In the garden, there are flowers, but there are also garbage, weeds. But the good gardener know how to make grow well the beautiful flower, but know how to handle the garbage. Because there are a deep connection between flower and garbage. So the good gardener know how to use the garbage, the compost, in order to make good manure for the good flower. And so the art of happiness, of making happiness, create happiness in us, is the art how to look deeply into our difficulties, our suffering, and know how to make use of that in order to feel happy and to be in touch with the happiness in us. So the subject of the art to take care of our happiness, the art of taking care of creating happiness in us is linked deeply with the subject how to handle our difficulties, our suffering, and to transform our suffering. Nghệ thuật is the art. Xử lý is handle, take care, handle happiness. The art to handle well our happiness, to take care of our happiness. This go together with the art to transform our suffering, our difficulties, our sufferings, our affliction. So we look both, and we see that they are weaving to each other. They are entangling. If we know how to handle our happiness, we also know how to handle our suffering. So if you know how to handle your suffering, you know how to handle your happiness. There are two subjects, but in fact it's only one. Two, but one. But we like to speak only the art to handle happiness only, because we don't want to speak about suffering. But anyway, you have to cope, to be in touch with suffering in order to handle well and touch your happiness. The gardener must know how to handle the growth of flower and transformation of compost. So you must have, a practitioner must have the master, the art of handling your happiness and handling your suffering. And if you don't know how to handle your suffering, you are not a good practitioner. In French, gérer, it means manage. They said that there's a management of happiness, but handling is the word I use too. And we are a practitioner, we must know how to handle that. So when people ask you, are you a practitioner? Do you have ability to create your happiness, to produce your happiness? Make it for me. And you have to sit there, and then you have to do it right away. So like somebody asked, do you know how to make tofu? And you said, that's okay, I'll do it right away. Do you know how to make sour soup? Yes, I can do it. and you do it right away. So the practitioner must be able to do it right away. At least a few minutes of happiness right away. And you can handle your suffering and touch your happiness. And if you can do that, you can help other people. People like to use with the art of happiness, but no one want to speak about the art of suffering. But they enter all, both but are one, because they enter all. Suffering and happiness, they enter. The practitioner must know how to handle well our body. Our body is the ground of many happinesses and many suffering. So the body is the ground for the manifestation of feelings. So the practitioner must look deep into his or her body. Take good care of his or her body. We practice not only with our mind, but we practice with our body too. And the practitioner must know how to handle our feelings. In Plum Village, we used to tell our body as a river. Every cell in our body is a drop of water in that river. And the river of body is like a river flowing, flowing and flowing. There are countless of drop of water are changing, flowing. So there is countless of cell in our body are transforming. Born, grow, get old, die. So our body is like that. So our body is not a solid, immobile things. Our body is not a solid, immobile matters, but it's a flowing river. And so the practitioner must know that go along with that river of body, we have a river of feelings. These feelings coming together follow another feeling, sometimes two feelings in the same time, three feelings in the same time, so on. And the river of feelings is also the object of our deep look. Of our mindfulness, of our deep look, and take care, and take good care of our feelings. We take good care of our body. Which part of that body have some need to be support, other part. So in the river of feelings, there are also some feeling need to be look deeper, help to transform, and so some feeling appear and you observe. You observe and you look deep, and in order to see the root, the nature, the root of that feeling. And if you understand the nature and the root of that feeling, you know how to handle well and transform them well in the better direction. So there is another river call mental formation. Mental formation is mean on the state of mind, like our sadness, our worries, our love, our hate, our jealousies, our everything. 51 state of our mind called 51 mental formation. There are good mental formation, there are unwholesome mental formation, wholesome formation, unwholesome formation, and there are also neutral mental formations. And the practitioner must know how to recognize that he is a good mental formation, he is unwholesome mental formation, etc. And we recognize it, and we look deeper, we see the root, where it comes from, and how we handle, and how to transform. Thanks to that recognition of this mental formation, look deeper, see the root, and you know how to handle and to transform that mental formation in the better direction or is bad in the other direction. It's a good mental formation. You also can increase the unwholesome mental formation. You see the root and you transform. And so the river of perception, the river of perception, sometimes they call Dharma, the river of Dharma. And Dharma is not the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha. Dharma is things that we can see. Pap is not France. Pap is France, what is he? Yes, Pap is big. D is Dharma, teaching of Buddha. But then that small D is Dharma, is things that we conceive. We have a notion about that. We have a notion about the table, notion about Thai, about the Plum Village, a notion of youth, about yourself, a notion about your father. That is your perception. That is the Dharma, the mental Dharma on you. Mental Dharma on that river, on that mountain, on that person, on that event. You have a notion about that. You have a perception about that, but that perception is never be perfect. You can perceive only one part of the event. You only can perceive one part of yourself. You think that you understood yourself, but not exactly. It's the same for your sister, your brother, your partner, and your friend. And our perception is always not total. It's only one part. And if we perceive the negative part of that person, we forget all the, we don't know that there is other wonderful part of that person. So you are very sad, and you suffer, and you draw yourself to another mess, you start to be worried and jealous, angry, and then you bring a lot of suffering. And so that perception is always wrong, is always partial, is never total, and you are very careful and humble of your perception, because your suffering may come from not a total perception of that reality. You only see one part, and then you are angry, or you are jealous, or you feel hurt. But in fact, it can be only from the root of your not total perception. And so because of that partial perception, there is conflict in you. And in conflict in you, there is many animals who come together and can give your body a lot of stress, a lot of tension, a lot of pain. And then disease is also because sometimes the many deep conflict of your perception, and then you suffer wrongly because you do not see the totality of reality. You suffer, and then it's with time it creates disease. So the taman, it means the mental formation, and the perception is very important. So a practitioner must take care of the body, of your feeling, and your mental formation. It means you know that you are sad or you are jealous, and that sadness comes from what perception, what notion, what perception you have about that event. And so you look deep, and then, for instance, you start by feeling that I have a big pain, a big suffering. And so you look deep into that big suffering, this big hurt, and you look deeper and deeper, and you discover, because I perceive things like that, because the other person perceive me like that, because a number of reasons, and then it's lead to that situation, and it's make me suffer so much, and others suffer so much. So, if the good gardener practice well, he know how to handle his garden. This is good flower, this is wheat, this is compost, this is... So you are a practitioner like a gardener. You recognize that your body have that part to be take care. Your feeling have that part. That part come from which perception. And then you know how to handle and to transform, to discover the root and to transform. And that is the good practitioner, because you know how to handle the garden of your mind and your body, the garden of your mind and your body. So, when you look deep into your body, to recognize what is wonderful in your body, and that difficulty in this body, that pain, that conflict, or that stress situation, or that stress, so you know how to take care of your body in order to transform that feeling, that sad feeling. It may come from your body. This morning you wake up, you feel so sad. Well, maybe your intestine doesn't work well. There is a lot of food undigested, and you feel not much energy. It could come from the body. And you have a very sad, discouraged feeling. It can come from your body. But if your body is in good health, there's no problem. And then you look to see from the mental formation, which kind of mental formation is, and the root of that mental formation, that sadness or that hurt, has come from what root? Root is the perception about that situation, and you feel hurt. The perception about that situation, that you feel abandoned or something like that. And so you look deep into this mental formation, and the root of mental formation is a perception, your perception about the situation and others' perception about the situation, so on. So a good practitioner have a lot of time to take care of your body, take care of your feeling, take care of your perception, very humble of your perception. And then here you see that the number of unwholesome mental formation is too big in your body, in your feeling. It's better to be in touch with other part of the mental formation, because in you there is also wholesome mental formation. Try to be in touch in order to keep the balance, and in order to one by one try to transform the difficult mental formation, the unwholesome formation, one by one, you try to take care. So that knowledge is very important for you to start to know, you know, that there is that four field, four domain of mindfulness, that of deep look that you need to know in order to handle well your situation and create happiness for you. So let's say you have quite a number of bad feeling about, wow, that feeling is not from my body. Oh, it could be from that perception. And then, however, that is an wholesome mental formation. I like to invite more wholesome formation, and you are in touch with what is positive, good in you first, in order to keep the balance. And after that, you handle one by one the suffering. In Plum Village, we used to speak about the interbeing of this one and other things. And the image we use to use is the lotus and the mud. Without mud, there are no lotus. Looking at the lotus, we must see mud. Because without not very fragrant mud, we have fragrant lotus. Our happiness and our suffering are the same, and our practice must be like that too. In among you, could be here is in the taste of happiness, in the taste of happiness that you have it. If you look deep into the taste of happiness in you, there is a sweetness of happiness. If you look deep and you can see the taste of bitterness, of suffering. Looking deep into the taste of happiness, you can find the little taste of suffering, bitterness of suffering. And the bitterness taste of suffering can make the happy taste of happiness more tasty. Like sometimes people make a sweet soup jie. They put a lot of sugar, but they also put some salt, because some salt will give the taste of sweetness more tasty. It's the same when you enjoy the taste of happiness now. You look deep and you still remember the taste of it. Of suffering in the past, the taste of bitterness of suffering in the past, thanks to that suffering that I now enjoy that. What happened to me now depends on our way of look. That things could be a joy or a suffering. Like when you open the door of your room to go out and to go to the meditation hall, the way you open the door, the way you walk peacefully, mindfully to the meditation hall. That could be happiness or not. It depends on you. It's not because of the door, not because of the path leading to meditation hall, not depends on your feet, but your way. You are happy or not happy is your way of looking that fact, these facts. The door, the path, the meditation hall, your feet. So here you have mindfulness. You open the door. Open the door. It could be a happy moment because from the warm atmosphere of your room, you can be in touch with the fresh air outside, a little bit cold, but fresh, renewed. And then when you make a step, you can make a step to be a joyful step, because having that feet well, without using the stick, without using the wheelchair, then it's so wonderful that I can step, offer myself many, many wonderful steps, peaceful steps. And that path leading me to meditation hall. So, for instance, before open the door, you remember that, oh, last week you have get cold and you're not allowed to get out of your room. And you lie down on your bed. You cannot go out, and you wish you missed the fresh air. You've missed the fresh air so much. And now, my short flash of remembering that this moment where I lie down without able to be in touch with the fresh air, now I am about to open the door and to be in touch with the fresh air. Great. So it's the same happiness, but it's more tasty. But if you say that, wow, outside is too cold, and I feel that I don't feel, but now I have to wear very thick coat and go to the meditation hall, I'm suffering. So that is the same. But for you, it's a misery to have to go out of your room, put the thick coat, and go to the meditation hall and suffer. So it's the same, but it depends on you. Have you seen a death cups of somebody die already, and he or she cannot move at all? Have you seen a cups of a bird or an animal? Even you are a 5-year-old girl, 5-year-old child, you can still see a corpse of a bird. A bird that cannot fly. A person died, cannot walk, have no life in her or in him. Even you try your best, but the bird cannot fly, the bird died. The corpse of the bird cannot move. That cubs cannot move, even a bird, or even an animal, even a human, a child, or an adult. During the time where our Sangha is in San Diego, a number of us have the chance to visit a museum they call Human Body, where they exhibit a lot of human corpses. There is corpses of those who are very young because of some disease or car accident or something like that. So there are corpses of young people, less young, adult, all. And there are hundreds of corpses on this museum in different positions. There are those in the position to skiing, skating, or there are those who are playing volleyball. And they use the kind of, they put something in order to keep this body, these cups, still like that. You can see the muscle in each, in this body. Sometimes they cut, they make a cut for us to see in the muscle or tendon or something. So we enter into that exhibition of cups. You can be in touch direct with the real body of a person. There are those who are younger than us, very young, but they also already die. Visit such an exhibition, 1 hour or 2 hours is like deep meditation about death. And when you get out of the museum, these images continue to follow us. And we know that one day we will pass away if we are not die, we do not die by sickness, by accident, we will die by old age. Everybody have to die. And when we make a step, and if we have that image of that corpse, and you say that, wonderful, that I'm still alive. I'm still alive. I'm making step. I touch the whole planet with my wonderful feet. And you enjoy every step. And you have a lot of happiness. We breathe in. We pay attention to our in-breath. We bring our mind back to our body. Our mind is totally with my in-breath. I'm in touch with the fact that, oh, my lung function well. Oh, my heart function well. And my whole body function well. I can walk. I can walk for you. You who are the cops there. I walk for you. And you see how wonderful that you can make such a step for all of them in that museum. They cannot do it. One day, I am walking. I'm walking for my young brother in the Dharma, Chimao. I learned that he passed away during the time where we are in Blue Cliff Monastery in the United States. And I walk for him. Now he entering in the stupa already. He cannot walk. Now I walk for him. We walk for him. Walk for him. And these steps are very wonderful. So, Sutu, my young Dharma brother, walk with my feet. I treasure my feet. I treasure my step because I step for him. I step for countless of people I love, but already in the cemetery or in somewhere, die already. So I walk wonderfully. I feel that I'm alive. I'm alive. I use my alive body to walk for those I love and who are not able to walk. But in that joyful feeling, there is a little taste of bitterness. Yeah. My young brother in the Dharma passed away already. And now he cannot walk like me. I walk for me. I walk for him. So the death of the person I love make me treasure more the fact that I'm still alive. And look deep into the lotuses, I can see mud. The joy we are tasting have the deep little taste of bitterness, of suffering, of the passing away of our beloved one. So that happiness is clear and is more tasty. For more than the last few months, when I practice the 10 mindful movement, I made for all these cups in that museum. And I feel that when I raise my arm like that, all of them are raising their arm because they cannot raise their arm. I'm raising the arm for them. Several hundred cups in that museum are raising their arm with me. And I feel very, all the feeling in every muscle, tendon of my body. And you raise your hand, you raise your arm for them, and you relax for them. Do it. And I have the ability to do that during many dozens of minutes during my 10 mindful movement. When I walk for my young brother in the Dharma, your uncle, young uncle teacher. So the sweetness, the sweet taste of happiness contains some little bitterness taste of suffering. Now Sư Thúc is sitting in the stupa. He cannot walk with us, so we walk for him. I remember when he went to Plum Village, the first time to Plum Village, I brought him to go and visit everywhere, Low Hamlet, Up Hamlet, Shengha, and he said that, on your four hamlet is have land bigger than the hamlet Thuy Xuân, where our root temple reside in Vietnam. And so he enjoy every step. I already guide him to enjoy every step. There is many photo we and him, we walk, do walking meditation. And he also came back the second time in Plum Village. And the second time he enjoyed more walking meditation. And now we can walk for him. If we walk for him, our walking meditation have more qualities. It's not for him, for anyone that you love and who pass away or who are paralyzed and who cannot walk. So you can walk for you too. You also can walk for you too. If you don't go into the stupa, you go somewhere. So better that you walk for you when you are a corpse. So for now, you are not a corpse yet. So try to walk for you. Walk for you when you are not in the stupa or in the part of ashes. So So don't wait until the other person walk for us. We walk for us. Walk for that cops who will be us in the future. Do you understand what I mean? Don't wait until you pass away and enter into the stupa and somebody walk for you. So you have to walk for you, walk for that corpse who will be you in the future. So in the sweet taste of happiness, you can feel the light, bitterness taste of suffering. When you play basketball, in order to be happy, you have to remember the moment where you are paralyzed on your bed because you cannot sit up. Now you can jump and you can throw the ball in happiness. So on the background of the moment where you lie down on bed and cannot walk at all, with that background, you will be happier when you play basketball. When you went through the Vietnam, the war, you have gone through the war in somewhere, and the images of war, of fighting, of killing, are a kind of background for you. And so when you live in a peaceful country where there is no war, and if you have that background, that taste, that suffering taste of suffering during the war as a background, and then the sweet taste of happiness, of peace now, is very profound, very powerful for you. If no, you don't feel that it's normal that we have peace here. It's not normal at all. If you remember this moment where French have undergone so great suffering of fighting with Hitler and with many other things, and the World War, and then people suffer, scared, deprived of food, of and during the long war, we wish that to have only 24 hours of armistice, only 24 hours of armistice. This is the treasure lot. And during that 24 hours of armistice without fight, during that 24 hour, people can breathe. And we have the impression that all the plant, tree, grass can grow more freely, happier. And flower and bird and animal are very happy. If you went through the terrible moment of war, you enjoy even one day of peace, one day of armistice. It's so precious. But now we have many, many, many days of armistice, many, many days of peace, but we don't enjoy. This is waste. And you are born after the war is gone. You have not seen the precious thing of that war. I remember at that moment, I try my best to walk for peace in Vietnam. Every time there is 24 hours of armistice, of stopping fighting for one day, and I feel so happy. I felt so happy. 24 hours, no one is killed. No one is threatening to be killed. And then there are tree can breathe, grass can breathe, animal can breathe. And I'm wondering why they are so ignorant, why they continue to fight. Why don't they stop to fight? There are young people who are born after the war and know and don't know what means war, and so they have no ability to enjoy the deep value of peace. In the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, Satipatthana Sutta, in the part of mindfulness on the Dharma, mindfulness on the Dharma, mindfulness on the perception. When, and we read like that, every time when there is a mental formation of anger appear, the practitioner know that I have a mental formation of anger in me. Every time there is a mental formation called craving, I know that I have a craving in me. On this mental formation, like craving, like anger, we have to recognize. Of course, we have to be in, to be mindful of on this strong mental formation, like anger, like. But the sutra also mentioned that you have to be aware that whenever there is no mental formation about anger or no mental formation about craving or drowning in me, there is no mental formation about drowning, craving in me. You have to recognize that too. So if you read the sutra, if you speak a little too much. If you have craving, you know that you are craving. If you know that you don't have craving, you must know that you are not craving. When you are angry, you know that you are angry. When you are not angry, you must know that you are not angry. But we have the impression that why they speak too much is a little bit exaggerated. But in fact, it's not exaggerated at all. Because when you don't have the feeling of anger, during that moment you are really happy, but you don't know. So the sutra said that there is no anger in you, no drowning craving in you. You recognize, and you must know that that is the moment of happiness. So, first of all, the happiness can define like the absence of suffering. So the absence of craving, the absence of anger, the absence of jealousy, you are so happy. You must be happy when you are not angry. You must be happy when you are not craving. You have no drowning passionate. And then you have no jealousy. You have no fear. Wonderful. So you have to be in touch with that, that the absence of craving. It means that there is no craving. So it means that having craving, it suffer a lot, huh? So in Plum Village, I used to speak about the toothache. And at midnight, when you have a toothache, and you know that the dentist is not there to help you, they cannot open the door before 9 a.m. So from 2 a.m. to 9 a.m., you suffer. And at that moment, you remember that without a toothache is wonderful. Without a toothache is wonderful. Without a toothache is happiness. And sometimes we have no toothache, but we are not happy. With that principle, so you have to practice. When I have a toothache, I know that I have a toothache. But when I have no toothache, I know that I have no toothache and I am happy. And the non-toothache can only recognized on the background of toothaches. Like peace. Peace is happier if you have the background about war. Without suffering, you cannot recognize the moment, many moments of happiness. So the memory of suffering can give you a good background for you to have a lot of happiness. Thanks to that, you can recognize countless of moments of happiness. You only remember a number of bad things you have in the past. So jealous, so fearful, so a lot of suffering. And now you have not at all these feelings. So it's a moment of happiness. So every minute of our life could be a happy moment. Yeah, we put that moment on the background of suffering in the past. So every moment is happy. Every moment, every single moment of our life is a happy moment. And when we have a suffering, but we use to use that background in order to say that, well, I know that I can do it. I can be happy. There are those who are unhappy but stay and plunge herself, himself into the suffering and let the sufferings dominate and make you suffer so much. And you are a practitioner. You have to be in touch with what is happy in you. You have one situation of unhappiness, but you still have countless of things of happiness. And so when you see like that, the situation is less tragic. So the practitioner must have the ability to look deep into your suffering. If you know how to handle your suffering, you will have the ability to produce happiness. This coming Sunday, we will learn the sutra on happiness, I think. Dhammapada. Chapter 39 is the last chapter of Dhammapada. And this sutra mentioned about happiness too.